Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Sarah Eisen.
You know, we're going to focus on the ups today. Everybody, tomorrow we'll get back to being cynical, disappointed.
You don't know that.
Two-handed economists again.
That doesn't
but
sound
for today,
like you.
today we'll be happy campers. Except I'm getting a look from Ned Phelps here. I mean, he's got some questions about all this, and I know that we have to address that. he has been gracious enough to come in and join us here in the studio, which is always the fun thing. We should start, I guess, and just say, are you any more optimistic? I know that you have been worried about whether this is a secular or cyclical downturn that we're in, and you're more on the secular side.
I've been optimistic short term and pessimistic long term. I've not been in the double dip camp. Seems to me the problem we've had in the past year or so is that the public sector keeps on relinquishing resources, discharging workers into the unemployment pool about as fast as the private sector has been able to hire. So I figured that once the public sector stops that, then we'll see rising total employment and rising GDP again. And I think we're beginning to see that now.
And then what is going to take us down from there?
Oh, I don't think we're gonna turn around and go down again. It's always possible during a recovery
I thought you were saying short-term
optimistic. I think we're on an uptick.
So what's the long-term pessimistic view?
Well, my long-term view is that we're in for a semi-recovery, not for the sort of super recovery that would take us back to the tremendously low unemployment rates of the internet boom or the almost tremendously low unemployment rates of the last decade when the housing boom was at its most feverish.
Well, you know, the St. Louis Fed president makes this case that we shouldn't look at it that way because we were in a bubble. Jim Bullard says we should, you know, think of where the unemployment rate and growth rates would be if not for bubbles. So, Maybe this is where we kind of want to be.
Yeah, that's what I try to forget about those bubbles and think about what the normal unemployment rate was in the 1990s. That was about 5.5. But my feeling is that the underlying secular forces of innovation and business investment activity are a good deal weaker now than they were in the 1990s. So I think that 5.5 would be a too optimistic prediction of where we're going in the medium-term future.
Just one headline crossing the Bloomberg terminal, that MF Global, of course, the trading company that is in trouble, according to Bloomberg News, said to seek a buyer for their futures unit within days. Vonnie Quinn's going to have all the details that we have coming up in just a few moments.
And this, of course, related to the Europe story. This stock has been hit hard because of its sovereign debt exposure. Professor Phelps, are you more or less optimistic about the U.S., given what we saw overnight in Europe, or does it matter?
Oh, I think Europe matters a little bit, and it could also cause a lot of disruption in the financial sector generally, if Europe fell in pieces, that would have ripple effects on the financial system and liquidity and so forth. But it looks like Europe has averted the crisis at the last moment, and Europe is going to go back to a not very influential player in the world economy. I don't think it's going to get in the way of this semi-recovery in the United States.
We just got into Europe, though, because you made a pretty dire. You said it sort of nonchalantly, Professor, but what you said was that Europe is going to lose its influence in the world economy. What exactly did you mean by that? Is this because of the debt crisis?
Oh, no. I thought for a long time that the Europe story is that once the various countries in Europe, especially on the Western continent, Germany, France, Italy, so forth, once they more or less caught up with the United States, then they couldn't grow fast anymore. They could only grow as fast as the United States. Or if the United States stopped growing, they could inch forward a little bit and improve their positions in the league standing. But it was, and in the last, even in the last decade, you can see very slow growth in most of these Western European countries, Germany included. slow productivity growth. They just don't have any engine. They don't have any economic dynamism. So they're not going to be supplying new innovations for the world. They're not going to be offering us anything that we can live off of. We're gonna be, as before, back in the position where we're on our own. We've got to do the innovating for the Western world. Now, of course, some people say, oh, China will come to the rescue, but that's another story.
Well, where are we on being able to do that?
Well, that's a big question.
You're not looking hopeful here.
it isn't those rosy internet revolution days anymore. and I think I've been mulling this over for months, a couple of years now. And I begin to remember all sorts of things that I noticed but didn't think about before. But maybe the biggest of these is we had a huge slowdown of productivity in the 1970s. It was just as if we had come to a shuddering stop, though in fact we still eked out growth at something, growth per worker of something like 2% or so, but nothing like the 3% or better that we had done in the 1950s and the 1960s. So we had this tremendous slowdown in growth and the result of that was that it kind of knocked the stuffings out of the capital goods sector, and more generally, out of the desire of businesses to invest in assets of all kinds, customers, trained employees, et cetera, et cetera. So that the natural tendency, if I may use that word, natural, the natural tendency was for employment to sink back to a lower standard, to a new normal that was much lower than before. Well, of course, the politicians were disturbed by that, and in the Reagan years, in the 1980s, they came up with some cuts in marginal tax rates. And by the way, the revenue effect of that was offset by closing loopholes. This was a pretty much a revenue neutral set of tax cuts. Cuts in tax rates, and that helped for a while. That they give a lift in the second half of the 80s, and then there was a bit of a recession, and then something wonderful happened. The internet revolution came on board, but that wasn't the result of that. Was just luck. We really got lucky, and that was a glorious period in my view. But you know, we can't have one of those every decade, even every
well, we had the 60s decades. And then we waited to the 90s. Do we have to wait 30 years?
And then after that was over, the politicians pushed the panic button again in 2001, 2002, 2003. We got the Bush tax cuts, but they were, I think, less efficacious than the Reagan tax cuts had been. And then they all got excited about, well, maybe we can have a push button artificial boom in the housing sector. And they put a lot of pressure on the banks and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to goose up the lending for residential housing. But then that came to grief, and I think now we're back to no, I don't think the new normal. No, this is not the new normal. We're below normal now. We're suffering from the housing overhang that won't last forever, and we're suffering from bad balance sheets in the banks that won't last forever. But these longer time forces that I was trying to point to, those are still around, and they are pointing us toward a very mediocre level of economic activity, level of employment.
You just made a visit down to Occupy Wall Street. Why did you do that?
Well, curiosity for one thing. I wanted to see what was going on there, what the tone was. As soon as I got there with my wife, conversations started with various people. That was quite interesting. You got a sense that most of those people are, above everything else, I think, just terribly worried about the future of their careers, career future, and also worried about the future of the economy. I sort of volunteered to speak to them, and I didn't bother with the Nobel stuff. I just gave my name, and I said that I understand their anxieties and their worries, their grievances, because after all, we had some pretty horrible behavior by the banking sector, and we had some pretty disreputable economic policies out of Washington in the last decade or so. So, I mean, for example, the massive deficit spending when we have huge financial tasks ahead in meeting all those entitlement claims coming up. We should have been going for fiscal prudence a decade ago. But anyway, I said to them that it seems to me that the government has to do two things. It has to really address the tendency for high unemployment that we have now in the economy that I was talking about earlier on this show. And my favorite proposal there is my idea of subsidies to companies for their ongoing employment of low-wage workers. And then I said, but that's just a kind of a Band-Aid that's necessary, but we also need to get the economy going again so that everybody's employment can be pulled up, not just employment of low-wage people. And that's, going to require a lot of thought about how to repair institutions, restructure institutions, so that we can get back to the dynamism of old.
Do you feel, I'm sure you've thought about this, do you feel that Occupy Wall Street is going to amount to anything other than an expression of grievance? There are no demands as such. And I mean, there are no group demands. There are so many different things that it strikes me as quantitatively different from the Tea Party. People there, for different reasons, were very angry, but organized, got into politics, elected people, for better or for worse, to make the changes they wanted. And the Occupy Wall Street people around the world just sort of seem to be in this amorphous, floating sense of anger. But where does that go?
Hard to say, Mike. you asked me for my feeling. My feeling is that I don't see any signs of the thing flagging so far. As a matter of fact, it seems to be spreading a bit to places like Sydney, I think, in Australia, and Auckland, in California. So it's so far it looks like it has legs. It'll go on for quite a bit. Whether it will get through the winter or not, I don't know. I agree that it's not well enough organized to put anybody into office, but on the other hand, I should think that politicians will get the message that there's more discontent out there than we understood before.
And do what with that?
Do what with it? What will the politicians do?
Mm-hmm. What kind of policies do you think that this will amount to?
Well, so far I'm just completely discouraged on the policy front. I can't remember the last time I saw a policy I liked.
Worried
about that. I don't understand Larry Summers' program to restore prosperity and dynamism by addressing housing foreclosures. I just don't get it. I don't like the Keynesian idea of consumer stimulus. I think it works in the short run. You get a bit of a pop from it, but I don't think it works in the long run. I've done macroeconomics for, I don't know, something like, my God, 50 years, I guess. So I've thought about these issues quite a long time, looked at quite a lot of data, and at times done quite a few statistical tests, and I've never found any evidence to think that Keynesian stimulus is a good thing to have in the long run. I think in the long run, what you want to encourage in every way you can is business investment activity. That's the great job creator. And you can do that in lots of ways for a while, but ultimately you're not going to be able to sustain high business investment unless you get business innovation going. Then that will avert the law of diminishing returns. You'll be able to have a high rate of business investment without suffering declining profit rates. I'm afraid that public thinking just isn't there yet. I don't see why. This is not so hard to grasp.
You would think
that it's not there.
Yeah, you would think that somebody out there would take that idea and run with it. I wanted to ask you about monetary policy. We were talking about fiscal policy and the lack thereof. We certainly have not had a lack of monetary policy. Do you think the Fed has been doing the right thing in trying basically anything?
Well, I don't think they should go around just trying anything. It's nice to have a sort of a public discussion. And I understand that they've taken some very aggressive steps. Just the sheer magnitude of what they've done in the way of buying up assets right and left is very radical, very impressive. But I don't know. It seems to me, painting with a broad brush, that the Fed has tried to do the right thing. They tried to meet the massive increase in demand for liquidity when that struck in 2008. I think they took their eye off the ball a bit in second half of 2009 when the inflation rate began to fall. And they didn't really get around to responding to that until, if I've got the dates right, spring of 2010, when they introduced QE2. And I was all in favor of that. I don't know a lot of people who backed it, but I can't be the only one. But besides the people in the Fed, I was fairly unusual in supporting it. I thought that the Fed's classic mandate is to stabilize the inflation rate and try to get the price level moving along a desirable trend path. And sure, there are some other things the Fed ought to be doing, but it's got to address that. It can't stray very far from the ranch in that respect without getting into real trouble. And it was in trouble. It had let the inflation rate fall down to from the 2% norm to something like 0.9% at an annual rate. So QE2 happened, and it did get the prices back up. That's a complicated story. It did get the inflation rate. I think inflation rate, the core inflation rate's now about 2%. So the Fed averted a very serious mistake, or corrected a very serious mistake, what could have been a very serious mistake, at the last minute, so to speak. Now I don't know whether I think it's questionable that we need a whole another round of monetary stimulus. It could be. I don't know. Maybe we do. But I think it's questionable. I think we have to, there's a doubt about that. I think there's a legitimate doubt about whether we need a QE3. But look, one thing is sure. The Fed's got to keep on buying assets. The economy's growing again. It makes sense that the balance sheet of the Fed grows in tandem with the growth of the economy. This is not the time for the Fed to say, okay, good, now the recovery is underway. Let's start getting rid of all these assets that we bought before. We're certainly not ready for that.
What will be Ben Bernanke's biggest challenge going forward here?
I think his biggest challenge will be when the day comes that inflation suddenly kicks up. Maybe this day will never come, but if it comes a day when the inflation rate kicks up and bond markets suddenly get very nervous and people are trying to sell bonds like mad to one another, and bond prices drop and yields on bonds go way up, then that's going to be a test of Bernanke's courage to see how he deals with that. And maybe the most courageous thing is to look the other way. That will depend. Or maybe the most courageous thing is to say, look, we've got to start selling off some of those bonds that we bought in such massive quantities in previous years.
Well, there are people who say that with inflation so low, the Fed should take advantage of it, that they could do a couple of different things. They could try to push it higher to inflate our way out of some of our debt problem, but they could also try to target nominal GDP, push that up through inflation. What do you think of those ideas?
I think anything like targeting nominal GDP is just strikes me as otherworldly. I know where that's coming from, of course, but it doesn't have any attraction for me at all. I think the Fed should be keeping its eye on the inflation rate, and when things are going well and it can do something to nudge output and employment in one direction or another, that's fine too. And whatever happens to the nominal GDP, who cares?
Finally, I just want to ask you about China, because I know you have some thoughts about it lately, particularly how it relates to the U.S. and the jobs picture here.
Of course, China is an amazing there are economic miracles, and there are economic miracles. And China is a real miracle. Things have gone extraordinarily well for that country ever since its audacious experiment with opening up the economy and opening the way up to a fair amount of private enterprise. Now they may have played out the formula that had worked so well for them for so long of tremendous building programs in the coastal cities, and now more and more in the interior. It may be that they can't go much farther with that. There are already signs of higher and higher vacancy rates, and a faltering of prices of structures. So they're going to have to figure out how best to open the way for increased business investment in equipment and internet stuff. The office structures will only take China so far.
All right, Ned Phelps, thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Of course, thank you.
He is a Columbia University professor, Nobel laureate, joining us here to talk about the U.S. economy, his longer-term big picture views there.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2011.